Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales slap in the face. A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true Sell or Diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die. Please help me welcome Jazzy. And you do these amazing things at, you're at Jazzy Things for those who want to go follow her right now. But you do these amazing reframes all the time. So can you talk about what those are and how you come up with them and maybe give us an example?
Yeah, actually, I can even
pull one up
directly.
Yeah.
Because I have them on my highlights. So
cool.
How I come up with these, I get inspired to think of the reframe by listening either to my own thoughts. And again, it's when I feel that negative emotion, which I've learned a lot from James Wedmore. I really want to attribute that there because he's really taught me the meanings that we start to put behind certain emotions. So when I'm feeling a negative emotion, I know right there it's an opportunity for me to reframe. Or if I'm observing others, coaching others, and they have some type of negative emotion, there's some resistance against their higher self or whatever that higher being may be, there's some type of resistance that needs to be reframed. So for example, I'll pull one up.
Cool.
Let's see. I better choose the best one. Okay. So this one is go from this. I didn't reach my goal. I'm a failure. And I wasted that time trying to this. I didn't reach my goal. Therefore, I have received a lesson to this. Because I have received a lesson, I now have an opportunity. Because I have an opportunity, this means that pursuing my goal in the first place has progressed me forward.
Ooh.
So there's an example.
So the framework for those listening is basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like it's take whatever negative emotion or feeling or thought you're having and write it down.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then turn it into some sort of lesson. Right. And identify and actually state, like, actually, instead of this being a negative thing, this is an opportunity. This is a lesson. This is something great. And
yeah,
then
and
is that how you do it?
Yeah. And I'll read another one too, to give more context, because it's also about finding the truth. It's about finding the truth in that statement. So for example, this is totally different context. This will be good. Go from this. I have a big decision to make. This will change a lot of things for me. So I have to get this decision right. It's hard to handle this pressure. So that's an example where it's not necessarily feeling guilt or feeling a negative emotion necessarily, but I'll read that again. I have a big decision to make. This will change a lot of things for me. So I have to get this decision right. It's hard to handle this pressure. To this, what assumptions am I potentially making about this decision? What is actually true about the present? To this, now that I know what is true, I simply need to determine my very next step, and I know that nothing is permanent. Therefore, this is not a matter of choosing the right versus the wrong decision, but simply determining what I can do in this moment.
Wow. How do you know when to apply these throughout your day? Like, how can our diehards begin to apply these in their life?
Yeah, so I don't want to default to saying it's intuition, because I used to think, well, my intuition isn't very strong. How can I be a good coach, or how can I coach myself? How can I recognize these? But it's really becoming present to what isn't serving you. And as I mentioned, that can be a negative emotion. That can be something that feels heavy. We use a lot of those, what would it be, an adjective? Heavy, is that, that's an adjective?
Yeah.
There's a lot of adjectives to describe our emotions. And so when those aren't serving us, especially with eating or with sales or whatever it may be, that's an opportunity to reframe. Because why would we even want to continue forward? Our subconscious will not want to continue forward if something feels heavy or if we feel stuck. And again, I've learned a lot of this from James, which is a lot of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. So saying we feel stuck, we're not actually stuck. Like, we're not physically cemented into the ground. We are choosing to feel stuck. We are having stuck thoughts, and we are not our thoughts. So to the diehards, when you feel an emotion or you're in an experience that isn't serving you, you feel, you're choosing to feel stuck in some way or overwhelmed or whatever that may be, that's an opportunity for you to say, well, what is actually the truth? What am I perceiving about this? And see the opportunity to reframe that.
So I'm going to give you some examples of real life things we experience, and then maybe you can help our diehards reframe them.
All right.
So it's the end of the quarter and I didn't make my quota.
Okay.
Therefore, I feel embarrassed, ashamed to go home to my family, worried about my job.
Yeah.
Like job security. Now what?
Yeah. So what I would actually address there is the actual quota itself, because imagine if they were meeting their goal every single quarter. Would they have been stretched farther? So should they have set their goal lower? So my reframe for that would be, did you actually get farther than you would have without the quota? Did the quota actually set that bar higher for you and stretch you farther? So there's the other side of, well, you know, I didn't financially meet this and maybe I can't put food on the table, but the mindset and the perception of it is, okay, you didn't meet your goal. That's fantastic. If your goal was way out here and you got here, imagine if your goal was here and you did meet it, you wouldn't have closed that gap from that higher quota.
Okay, so wait. So you're talking about something we often talk about on this show, which is set your own goals. Don't just take the quota that your sales manager delivers to you because they threw a dart at the wall and determined that's what the sales they need you to make. But you also need to set your own goals. And so do you have a method for like setting goals? Because you're talking about different sets of goals. That's what I'm picking up on here.
Well, what I was really referring to with different sets of goals is if we are like right in the present moment, if we, I guess they can't see me, but we are right here, like right here. If we didn't set goals, we would remain right here. But if a quota or a goal or whatever it may be is way out here and we get, they can't see me, is 2 feet away from our bodies and we get a foot and a half, imagine if that goal would have only been a foot away and we would have only gone a foot farther. So it's kind of abstract. I guess I could have used numbers. If we set a goal of closing $100,000 in sales and we only, this would be easier, and we only reach $80,000, imagine if that goal or that quota would have been at 50,000 and we met it. Cool. You met your goal, but it was much less than what you would have hit with a higher goal. So I don't think it's a matter of not hitting the quota. I think it's a matter of what did you do along the way? And what's everything you experience in pursuit of that quota? And again, some people may be thinking, well, no, actually, it's pretty black and white. I need to hit my quotas.
Blast off.
We're here.
It's Motivation Monday.
So let's talk about it. Like, what do you think, where do you think someone should start when they're negotiating?
Well, unfortunately, negotiation is one of those bogus words that actually means negotiate price. It's not negotiation to do the deal, that 99 out of 100 people want to lower your price. And so the challenge that you have there is, can you give, offer, prove enough value to the customer to where price becomes less of an issue. Now, if it is an issue and the person's a cheap bastard or they only take the lowest price or something like that, then you have to deal with the negotiation. And then the question is, can you put into that RFP or that bid things that the other person cannot if the company demands it. In other words, if I brag on five things, why don't they just say, prove it? You can't send me anything in this proposal that doesn't offer proof as well.
You know, I love that because a lot of people don't think about, okay, well, I'm going to have to go back and back this up when they're negotiating and thinking about negotiating. Like, you just sort of throw something out there in the heat of the moment, but you really do have to go back and be able to prove it. And you might be proving it through a customer testimonial or something else that someone can corroborate what you're saying so that it's not just you.
Agreed.
The other thing that I think about, and I don't think enough people do this, is if you want to be a master negotiator, put yourself in the other person's shoes. Think about what would be a win to them. How can you get them to that win with still winning yourself? And really think about their emotion. What are they thinking about? What are they fearful of? How can you mitigate their risks? How can you decrease, you know, whatever they're worried about? And if you can do that, you can have an open negotiation, because negotiation isn't always and only about price.
But it's a lot of it. And you have to deal with the reality that they're not negotiating, can you deliver this on Tuesday instead of Wednesday?
Correct. But if you're talking about price, you might also be able to talk about value and extra things you can do for them that are part of the negotiation. So like, yes, I still have to charge you $20, but because you're worried about this thing, I'll throw this thing in, or I can do this other thing in addition to that, or I can make sure it's going to do this, this, and that, and throw in extra services, because I don't really like to decrease my prices. How about you, Jeffrey?
Here's the insight. If you are offering a product and your competitor is offering the same product or relatively the same product, and you think your product is superior, the only question is, does the customer think it's superior? And if they don't, you're screwed. So I'm going to begin my line of questioning after the customer takes ownership. I'm going to say, Bob or Mr. Jones or Mary or Mrs. Jones, when this is delivered, what's going to happen when you open up the box? What's going to happen when you plug it in? What's going to happen when your people start to use this? What will impact the productivity, the morale, the profitability of my product, whatever it is, or my service, whatever it is, to your company? And let them tell you everything that happens, like what's happening right now. What do you expect to happen in the future? What's caused that? What's the service response time? Try to find things that create a bit of superiority for you.
Yes, 100%.
And if you're looking at it from the perspective of your price, you're barking up the wrong tree, because if you lower your price by a dollar, you take a dollar out of profit. Mm-hmm. So, diehards, please welcome the great Maria Migliocco.
So what would you tell our diehards about starting a social platform? Like, where do they begin if they don't have many followers now?
Well, I would say YouTube is still the best platform if you want to go organically, to grow organically. Because if you want to grow on Instagram, you really need to invest in ads. And I would say investing in just ads like that are run by Instagram doesn't really make a lot of sense. You need to find the bloggers, have your audience, and ask them to talk about you, which costs a lot of money, takes a lot of effort, because if you're targeting micro-influencers, there's like a lot of work around that. So I would say start on YouTube, talk about things that you're expert in. So you have to have some expertise. You cannot just start just because. And then answer questions that the people are looking for. Like, I would go to Google Trends, look for, this is what I used to do, like what people look for, like how to pass GMAT, and I would create a video how to pass GMAT. It wasn't professional. I was just using my phone. No script, nothing. Just
rambling.
Talking my heart out.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and then people looked for this. YouTube suggested my videos, and this is how I got my initial following. And it's going to take a while. It's going to take a year or two to get like to 10,000, 15,000 followers, depending on your topic. Then they're going to be organic. And then from there, you can just take
but
it out.
But you had a basic advantage over other people. You were smart.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Like, you can't be an idiot and do this.
She just said you can't be an idiot, basically.
You
can't.
Yeah. You have to be either an expert or you have to be really charismatic. Like, if you're doing entertainment, you have to be funny. So yeah, it's not just like everyone can start and everyone is going to become like a million follower blogger.
So you didn't know that you'd grow to millions of followers on YouTube. And you said it could take, you know, a year or two to even get past 15,000. How did you keep going? Like, what prevented you from just giving up?
Just seeing that progress. You know, in the first year, it's still like in 2 months, you're getting 1,000 views. And when you don't expect anything, because I think some people will start on YouTube and it would be like, oh, I would need to hit like 100,000 followers by the end of the summer. And then they can do it and then they give up. I didn't have any expectations. Like, my only motivation was to share information and that was it. And then I was so happy about those 1,000 views. And then in like 5 months, I had 1,000 followers. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is like a whole army of Lake Marina. And I was just super happy about that progress. And this is what kept me going. And also like seeing people like reading their comments, they would be like, oh, Marina, I followed your advice. And I just got admitted to, you know, Harvard Business School. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible.
So you didn't really get what you totally wanted in the beginning, but you kept at it. And I think,
I got the attention. Like, I wanted to share stuff and this attention came from like a comparably smaller group of people, but I was happy with that.
Yeah. But it seems like your goals grew as you grew, which is cool.
Exactly. That's good. Yeah. And then I was like, okay, I need to talk about a broader topic. Maybe I should talk about languages. And then, you know, it just kept growing.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to gittimerlearningacademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher. And come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.